You're listening to the Salon Owners Collective podcast, where each week we share stories and expertise from business owners like you, plus experts, influencers, and Larissa's actionable steps that will transform your business and your life. And now your host, Larissa McLemon.
Hi, and welcome to the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Today, I'm delighted to welcome back one of my previous podcast guests and talk about the tremendous growth that she has created in her salon in the last year since that I had her on the show. Meet Shelley, the owner of Urban Betty Salon in Austin, Texas, who over the last couple of years has successfully transitioned off the floor and from behind the chair and into the true role of salon owner. Now, with your days focused primarily on marketing, operations, and the greater vision of her salon, she has grown to the point of now working to open her second salon location. Listen in as we talk about the steps she took to make those transitions and the mindset shifts that came with it. Shelley, welcome back to the Salon Owners Collective podcast. I'm really pleased to have you back for a second visit.
Thank you, Larissa. I'm excited to share all my updates.
Absolutely. Now, around a year or so ago, you came and joined us. You had just come off the floor and were launching into your new version of a business owner. And I'm really keen to hear the update, what's worked, what have you learned. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about where you are in the world and your salon, and just take us into your business. What does it look like? Who is in there? Give us a look for those that don't know you.
Great. So my salon is located in Austin, Texas, and we opened in 2005. It's called Urban Betty. And I opened in 2005, and it was just myself doing hair, and I had one contractor. And we continuously grew and grew and grew, and we moved into a different, bigger space in the same shopping center. And here we are 13 and a half years later, and I have 23 stations and I have over 45 employees, and we're all only commission-based. So I started out with contractors and kind of slowly moved into a commission-based salon because I kind of figured out along the way that it's actually a more profitable version or it's just a more profitable way to do things. That's the best way I can say it. And people ask me what the secret to that was or how I made that transition. It was just a very slow transition and it didn't happen overnight. But that's a big, huge component to the key to my success. So I tell people that all the time. And so I couldn't be more blessed. And we're actually opening a second location this fall.
Wow. So that really is progress.
Yes, it is. Yes, yes, yes.
All right. So those are some of the things we need to explore today. So I'm keen to hear about this second location. But before we do, let's go back to a year or so ago when we first chatted and you'd taken that leap of moving on your clients and just moving into business management. Tell us about that transition and, you know, what have been the pros and the cons since you've done that?
Okay, it was super scary. So I went to beauty school 1993 through 1995, became a licensed hairstylist in 95. I was 18, just worked at the chop shop, figured out if this was my bag or not. Like, am I good at it? Do I want to do it? Got a little more comfortable, started doing weddings, started doing color, figured out, okay, I can work at a higher end salon now. I built my confidence up. And once I worked at a couple higher end salons, I thought, you know, in my wildest dreams, one day I know I want to open a salon. It just kind of hit me like a beam of light one day. And I thought, well, you know, I see all the things that they're doing great. And I see a few things I think I can do better. Because, you know, when we're in our 20s, we're, oh, we know everything. And I can do this better. And so at the ripe old age of 27, I opened my own salon. And, you know, I had been doing hair just in like a booth rental salon suites situation 3 years prior to that. So it gave me a great stepping stone to launching and opening my own business because I had already been working for myself. And I decided to just kind of take the plunge. And I tell people a lot of the times, like, I'm glad I didn't know all of the things that go into it because I probably wouldn't have done it. Ignorance is bliss.
And absolutely.
And I, like I said earlier, I was just wanted to be a booth rental contractor salon. But then as I brought on an employee to help me because I needed an assistant because I was working 6 days a week. I decided to bring on an assistant. Then I decided, okay, great, commission stylists actually make the business more money. And I did realize this is really hard on my body. I can't do this all day long. I surely can't do this till I'm 80, and I can barely do it, you know, when I hit 30. It was rough, 40 hours a week. I was coming home with aches and pains, and I thought, okay, what's my exit strategy? How am I going to get this place profitable enough to give me a paycheck to where I don't have to be behind the chair? Because for the first, I don't know, 10 years, my paychecks came solely from me being behind the chair. The rest of my income from everyone that worked there paid the bills. You know, I know a lot of people don't understand that, but once you're in it, you do. You never understand all the variables there that are there and all the costs that come into play until you actually own a salon. And I was just spinning my wheel like a hamster. I couldn't figure out how to make a profit and get out from behind the chair. And we brought on this, it's called Summit, and it's through Redken. And I, you know, I just said, you know what, they kept approaching me and I kept saying no, like, oh no, I know better. And then I finally was at my wit's end because I was sitting there with negative $2,000 in the bank and this huge salon. And I was, you know, the bank was calling me every day and we were just using Peter to pay Paul, you know how it is, just working on cash flow, never a profit. So I brought in a business coach and I brought in these Summit salon systems. And I said, my end goal is to get out from behind the chair. Can you help me do that? And I kid you not. So we brought them in 2014. I retired from being behind the chair in January of 2017. So it took about 3 years. We had to redo the entire, everything the way we did our salon. And it was totally worth it. It was intensely hard. We lost a lot of people in the process, but I didn't open a salon for other people. I had to be like, I open it for myself. It's a good thing to make a profit. It's a good thing to be a successful business owner. And I found my passion in marketing, and that's what I wanted to do. I did not want to do hair anymore. I dreaded it. I mean, and I did it slowly. I tell people, I started taking every Tuesday off to be admin day. Then I started taking every other Saturday off. Then I started taking every Saturday off. Then I started taking every other Friday off. Then I started taking Friday. And then it was slowly but surely, I was only doing hair 10 hours a week. That way I could just slowly hand all of my clients off to assistants. And so it was a nice transition. And a lot of them sometimes liked my assistants better anyway, I think. And then their price point was better. And so, yeah, literally January last year, 2017, I was done. It has been the best decision or I've ever made. Could not tell you. I have not even noticed anything in my budget. My salon is doing better than ever. I think it's because I finally took time to focus on marketing, to focus on strategies, to focus on accounting, all those things that I was trying to do both really well. I was trying to do hair really well, and I was trying to do the admin side of business really well. And I think I was doing both of them medium. I don't think I was bad at either one of them by any means. I mean, I don't think I was bad at doing hair. It wasn't my passion anymore. Business was my passion. And so once I finally completely put my head in that game, it has done nothing but made my business explode. And so I can't really give you any negative feedback for that. There's been nothing other than going, okay, I have to not feel guilty if I'm not there as much. Yes. So people helping me with that, because I know I've earned it and I know I deserve it, but I want people to know a lot of the times I'm doing a lot of the stuff behind the scenes. Like right now, this is considered work. I'm doing things behind the scenes and people don't see that. And so I have to remember it's okay. They know I'm doing enough. And so I hope that kind of sums everything up. It's a lot.
Yeah. I want to dive into a couple of those things because you see some really key things that come up for me when I'm working with salon owners that you have articulated. So let's talk about them. I think the first one let's talk about is the guilt of not being there so much or being there in a different capacity and the people in our business not understanding what it is that we do as the business owner because it's not visible.
Right. I mean, that's a huge one, especially I'm battling it because when I open my second location, I have to be at, I'm going to be at 1 2 days a week and another 2 days a week. Right now I'm just at my current space 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I'm there from about 11 to 5. And I'm doing a lot of, I mean, it takes me a few hours just to get through my email. And it when, you know, I had a friend and she was like, so now that you're retired, what do you do all day? And I thought, oh my gosh, that is such a trigger question. It's like, yeah. She meant it in a nice way, but it triggered me. It really did, because I thought, well, first of all, I have 45 plus employees. So I can't tell you all the fires I put out all day long. I'm responding to customer complaints, employee complaints. I am dealing with the accounting all day long. I'm dealing with emails coming in. I'm constantly trying to figure out ways to just promote my business. I'm doing social media all day long. A huge, huge part of what I focus on is social media. It's very important to me. And so I do a lot of this organically. I don't have, a set day with everything mapped out on certain times. I just get it done and I do it as I do it. So if you ask me, so Shelly, what do you do all day? I'm kind of give you a blank stare, because I've done so many little things. It's hard for me to tell you. And I've been doing a lot of things in a closed office or at my house. So it's really hard for me to show you. But if I say, hey, look at my salon, look how well it's doing. There's the proof. Like, I have to really find my heart and find that answer. And it's hard for me a lot of the times. And right now I'm like trying to tell myself that. And it's funny, because I check in with my employees every once in a while. And I'm like, you know, hey, do you, you know, I mean, it, and it's funny, it's maybe I'm trying to validate myself, but and they're like, oh my God, no, we know you're doing stuff all the time. I'm on boards and I do other things. My husband and I have another side business and I have an app for hairstylists. And so there are all these things that are part of it too. And so it's my own crazy voices. And I think other people, they're like, yes, Shelly, we know you're busy. We know you're doing stuff all day long. And even today I check payroll. So we do payroll, and I was checking it. One of the stylists was in there. She was like, are you doing payroll? And I was like, oh, I check the payroll every time we do it every week. I'm not doing it. But, you know, it's just funny. I thought, here we go again. Like that. Yeah. And so I think it's always going to be something I try to overcome, because I'm an overachiever and I'm type A. And I think probably as years go by, it will get less and less. But I feel like I will always have that internal battle of, am I doing enough? Am I contributing enough? And I feel like that's any successful person. Because if you didn't have that voice to help drive you, you wouldn't be doing all the things you're doing.
I fully agree. And I know that, you know, that question that comes from family members or people, that retirement question, or now that you're not doing clients, you must have all this free time to be sitting on the beach playing with your children or whatever it is. Like, really? Yeah. Actually, you have no idea.
No, they have no idea. You know, it's crazy. And I do have two amazing managers that do a lot of things, but they're still, at the end of the day, there are a lot of decisions only I can make. Mm. And and my salon, no one has the passion for your business like you do. And there's a certain amount of work there and an essence of that never leaves your head. And so you're always, always on. You know, I can't for tell sure. people that until they're in it, you know?
Yeah. 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 And I know even, you know, like my vision of, so I run this program, Freedom and Profit, and my vision of my own sort of ability to have freedom is to be able to sit on the beach. But you know what, lo and behold, I'll be sitting on that beach enjoying and watching my children, but I still have my left eye on my phone, just checking all the moving parts. And my brain is still there thinking about, that's when I get creative, actually, is when I've got the space.
Thank you.
And the freedom to think. That's when the best ideas come. And I'm working on my business just in a different way.
You're so right. That is funny, because I feel like that's the moment you kind of let everything relax. The good ideas flow in, the energy, the universe, everything flows in. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Harry, I'm trying not to work and I just got another idea. And so I have a great app. It's called Wunderlist. And I'm just like, Shelly, put it in there. Just write it down so you quit thinking about it. But if you saw the notes section of my phone or this Wunderlist app, you'd be like, all right, we are backing away slowly.
Now, speaking of lists and documents, just on that, you know, what are you doing? We actually had, when I had my salon, we had this document. It was a shared document. We would print it out and put it on the back wall. We had a very busy back wall, but it was a document that said, who does what? We actually called it Who Does What, and each of the moving parts, myself included, what we contributed as managers or front of house or as the owner was on that document for many reasons. One, it probably satisfied my own need for my team to know what I did and contributed to the business, but also for the team to know, well, who do I go to? If it's a payroll thing, who is that person? If it's I need a day off, which person do I need to talk to? Because what happens sometimes is they always come to the boss or the owner, and we never get free of the daily operational stuff until we actually formally say, well, look, this is not my role or not my responsibility anymore. You need to speak to the right person. This is the right person. So that was super useful in terms of that freeing yourself and understanding of your role and everybody else's role, right?
I love that. I mean, it's something we should implement. We do a thing where it's like it's the branch, leaf, the tree, the decision maker tree. And so we really try to, even in training, instill like, is this a decision, A, you can figure out on your own, you're a leaf, or B, is it a branch, so you need to find a manager? C, is it a trunk decision where the owner needs to make it? Really think about that before you, and go through those proper channels, because I guarantee you they know when they text me something, the minute I'm like, well, you need to ask so-and-so, and that has cut down tremendously. It barely ever happens anymore, but it was for a long time happening all the time. And the hard thing is too, is they figure out, they know too, who to ask, who's going to say yes and who's going to say no. And my manager and I used to joke, like, she was, got to be the mean parent and I got to be the nice parent, and it wasn't fair because they knew they could get a yes out of me because I'm like empathetic, or I'm really busy on the floor, and I'm like, yeah, that's no problem. She's like, I literally just told another person no to that, or I just told them no, and she knows the answer because she's not a hairstylist, she thinks with the other side of her brain, she's very analytical. That's why I hired her, she's amazing. But we had to have that process where, and I had to go, okay, just like mom and dad, like, I don't tell a person yes or no until I've checked in with her, or I just put it in her, like, that's a Kim decision. That's what I tell them. And so that really cut out a lot of that, but they do that.
Absolutely. I call it the mum, dad, and the police.
Yes. You know,
there's somebody who gets to be the mum, and then there's the dad in the relationship. And then every now and then the policeman needs to come in and knock on the door and to say, hey. Yep.
I love it.
Yeah, I love the tree idea. I do want to talk about a little bit about this you slowly but surely process to stepping away from the floor, as you know, there's a time which is the right time to step off the floor for you not to financially notice. Tell me a little bit about that process, because you said in that last leap there was not actually a deficit, there was actually forward momentum.
There was, and it's it was interesting because I, of course, you can't just go from 40 hours a week to not doing hair at all, because A, it's going to freak your clients out. So I think I stepped away gradually enough, and I watched as my profit margins got a little bit better each time. So as I brought on more people and we were doing the summit system better, which we have all of our stylists on certain levels, certain commission-based pay, I was able to watch my margins, and I wasn't a crazy intense person watching these all the time, because I feel like the more you watch a boiled pot, that's not, you know, it's not going to boil. So I didn't obsess on it. I just was like, okay, here's what I feel comfortable with, a cushion in my bank account. Can it pay two payrolls without me doing hair behind the chair with my pay? And I thought, you know, that's a good place to get. So if you can have two payrolls at least in your bank account, where you could pay that with your pay without you behind the chair, then that's a good starting point. And I would tell people that was what felt safe to me. No one gave me that perfect number. There's not a perfect number out there. But to me, you know, I was always that person trying to play catch up, like I said earlier. And we even had, you know, a 2-week lag on our pay and all these pay and just this cash flow problem. And once we got all that caught up, and then I had enough money just sitting there, I knew, okay, we have enough of a margin here, which I think, you know, salons, it's the average is 3 to 5% margins. And for people, you know, listening that aren't owning yet, that's 3 to 5 cents per dollar. That's all that you make. That is the current industry average in the States. Wow. It's not great. That's like restaurant average. And so we have been up to almost 13% one month. I don't know what magic that was. It was probably the holidays. But we average on a 9% margin. And that's really, really, really good for our industry. And that's with me doing the best that I can and really budgeting. So we have our business coach, she comes every quarter and we go over our budget. And sometimes we're over in certain areas and sometimes we're under in certain areas. But you can't be in control of everything if you're not aware of it. So you have to look at your budget, you have to look at your numbers, and you have to have that nest of money in your account because you never know what's going to happen. And so that to me was like getting that nest of money, that spot where I felt comfortable, which was two payrolls. And I thought, okay, let's just take the jump. Because anytime I've made a leap in my career, what has helped me was this little voice. It was like, Shelly, you can always go back to what you were doing. Shelly, mm-hmm. you can always bring Saturdays back. Shelly, you can always go back to doing hair. And I've never ever had to. I still want to knock on wood though right now, just to but seriously, that is what has kind of helped talk me off the ledge. And the margins have only gone up. And I think honestly, it's an energetic thing too, as well. I know some people may not be into that. So it's, if you are, that's great. If not, but I really truly believe we have as much money as we think we're emotionally worth. And the minute you take away certain stressors and you just kind of release it and let it go or quit focusing or concentrating on that and say, you know what, I'm going to just do the best job I can do promoting my business and marketing my business. It actually made more money with me focusing on that versus being behind the chair, just focusing on trying to give myself a paycheck. That was my huge transition.
I think you're so right. Actually, this kind of, it does depend on your money story and how you mm-hmm. Believe in money and how, you know, whether you feel bad and guilty about having money. And you said it right at the beginning, you know, your decision to actually realize it's your business and to be selfish, because sometimes we can feel bad about being selfish,
totally.
But actually profit is first. And I have to say the same story was true for me when I actively decided, I actually wrote this down, profit is king. And I got that sentence from somewhere, I can't remember now, but I decided to adopt it. And at first it didn't feel like a good fit because it felt like that was a very selfish sort of thing to say, to make
right.
profit priority. But I realized that unless I did that, actually I was letting everybody else down because I wasn't creating a profitable business to ensure we would even be there tomorrow.
Right.
And it wasn't until I made that transition and decided to prioritize profit that we actually started to become super successful and thus profitable.
Yeah, that's so true.
But it's a mental challenge, right?
It's totally, everything's mental. And I see my younger stylists struggling that are in their early 20s. And I remember being there, and it's interesting because they look at me and think, oh, she's doing so well and all this. And I have to stop and tell them, you know, you guys, I used to work every weekend. I used to work till 9 p.m. When I first started doing hair, I made $7 an hour. I ate was fast food. I mean, there was even a time, you know, right before we brought on the Summit Salon Systems that, and I'm not trying to endorse them, I'm just saying this is what we did, but where I had to live, like I actually had to borrow money for rent, you know, 8 years into owning my salon because mm-hmm. I had upgraded to a larger space and then I couldn't pay all my bills because I had four people leave. So I wasn't prepared for a catastrophe and that happened. And I made it through it through a tax refund and borrowing friends' money. So it's just one of those things like I had to, you know, I see a therapist, I say, or a life coach, whatever you want to call her. She's just my guru. And I was seeing her every week and I see her every other week now. And I have a business coach. I need all these outlets and I need all these people. And they had to flip the script in my head because my script was, I'm not worthy. And if I make money, I look greedy. And I had to flip that script. Like, who wants to work for a business owner that's not good at business and that's not making money? If you do, then the place is going to close. So I had to be like, they want to see you do well, Shelly.
Yes.
But it's even better. You need to want to see yourself do well and you need to quit worrying about what they're going to think. And that it took a while. It doesn't happen overnight. Like most of the stuff, it takes a while to get there. I had to overcome a lot of challenges.
Well, amen to that. I absolutely agree with all of that. That's amazing. So let's jump forward now to a little later this year. You're looking at opening a second location. Tell us a little bit about that decision and the things that you've had to consider to decide that that's going to be the next step.
Well, it's been a very interesting, different process for me because I had an opportunity come up. I really wasn't even wanting to open a second location. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just trying to like keep this one where it's at. I've got too much to do, you know how it is. And then, well, so I had someone say, well, there's this space and you have an opportunity to purchase it. It was 1400 square feet. It's It's a brand new building. And I thought, oh my gosh, this usually all you can do around here is rent. Everything that's available for purchase is way too expensive. And then by the time you try to convert it into a salon, it would just, it would be insane. So I was like, I really need to take advantage of this offer. And so we actually, my husband and I bought the space. And right now, it took a year for it to be built out. And we took it almost, it's like a second mortgage, so a second home. And so that was a very scary thing. And so we've had to make some adjustments in our personal budget. And so we have that. And we literally closed on it like 2 months ago. And right now my contractor is planning the space. So we haven't started the construction on it. And what it is too, is I had three people come over and be shareholders at this new location with me. So I golden handcuffed in some of my top employees. I have three employees, two of my managers and one of my stylists that have all been with me for 10 years. And I kind of call it the 10 years, 10% shareholder. So they are not 10% of the entire Urban Betty. I broke off and did a different corporation for the salon, and I'm licensing the name Urban Betty to it. But I have three shareholders, and so I'm 70%, and they're all 10% each. And they're all going to help me run it and get it off the ground. And then it's a way for me to look at, how can I reward them with sweat equity and A, to get them to stay in this business because they're all a very integral part of my business and keeping it alive. And B, where's my exit strategy? So it's almost a test for them because it's a 2-year vetting process. So in 2 years, I could say, hey, you guys have done a great job. The 10% is yours. So the 10% is theirs, but they're still, they've got a 2-year, like they've got to prove themselves. And my exit strategy there too is maybe in 5 to 10 years, I sell my shares back to them. One of them or all of them together, they own that space or they own that salon by themselves. And I still license the name to it, or they get a percentage of the other salon. So I'm kind of playing with that. And I am, I'm not the expert at it right now by any means. It's a brand new thing for me that I'm jumping into. I just wanted to reward some of my employees with a piece of the business. And this was the safest and best way for me to do that. So that's also another reason I opened the salon, so they could have a part of it. And it's really cool to see them have that look of ownership in their eyes and be proud and want to be part of the process and really be involved. And that was a really cool thing to do. And it's a little bit of an experiment as well.
For sure. Well, congratulations for taking a leap into something unknown and giving it a go. I think that's it's a really great approach.
Thank you.
I've seen the sweat equity, partnership for longstanding employees work extremely well. So I will be, watching with interest to see how that develops. One of the things that pops into my mind is when I opened my second salon, I didn't have any stakeholders in the process. But one of the challenges that I faced at that time, and I've had this conversation many times with salon owners, is who do you move from which location to where? And if you move some people, some really strong standing people from location one into location B, what happens to one? Tell me a little bit about that thought process and what are your plans are around that?
Yeah, I actually met with another salon owner last week to pick his brain a little bit. He owns three salons here in town, and he gave me some great pointers, which I was like, okay, good. We're already doing that. He said, don't take all of your best people and don't. And I was like, okay, I'm not. I'm really taking, we only have 6 chairs at the new salon. So current salon is 23 chairs, new salon is 6. So it's much smaller. So there's only 3 people that I'm bringing over, and 2 of them are fairly new, and 1 is a longstanding stylist. And then the rest, we're just going to hire new people. So we wanted to bring like a piece of our culture over there, but also add new people onto it, because I didn't want to completely dilute my pool of stylists at location 1, bring them all over to 2, and then both businesses are struggling. I could see that happening very easily. And so we have a lot of associates that are training 5 or 6, and they'll be going onto the floor when we move these new people over. So I had to be very careful about it. And also had to be like, you know what, the first few years we're probably just going to break even. So I need to be okay with that and not try to overstaff it with people and hurt the first one, because the first one's my baby and I need to remember that. So I have been very careful about that. And I know I still have a lot to learn, and I'll probably figure out a lot of it on the way. My business was built on making mistakes. and I continue, I tell people that's human, that's normal. It's just, if you learn from this mistake and you get up and brush yourself off and keep going, that's the challenge. And so I know probably if you and I talk a year from now, I'm going to have a lot more to say about that. And I'll so I'm just crossing my fingers. I'm trying to be careful, but I know things will happen and I'll be like, oh crap, I should have known that, you know? So yeah. I'm excited. I'll bring it on. I'll let it all transpire as it's meant to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that approach alone is, you know, a huge part of your success. You know, we create a straight line strategy, but it's always a wiggly line and it goes up and down and round and round in circles. And yep. being okay. I remember somebody asked me one time, so why are you so successful? What's one of the reasons? What would you put that down to? And do you know, I just said, do you know, it's just grit. It's the ability yeah. just to keep going when shit hits the fan and it doesn't work out. And as you said, standing up, brush yourself off and keep going. I think that's half of the strategy right there. And then just being brave enough to give it a go.
It is. And don't be scared to look stupid, because nobody knows what they're doing and everybody is just faking it till they make it.
Absolutely faking it. And thanks to social media, we all look like we're having a fabulous time.
Oh, yes.
But we're all
perfect
doing
line.
The squiggly line. Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Look, last question before we move into wrapping up. When is the right time that you think, and you're making this up a little bit, I know, so you might not have the answer, but this is an answer that a question I get asked a lot. When is the right time to consider opening my second salon? When is it not the right time to be opening your second salon?
That is a great question, because I feel like I was kind of thrown into it because I had a great real estate offer. So it's probably much like when you feel safe enough, when I got off the floor, and I had enough cushion in my account. So if you have enough cushion in your account to help with the cash flow of that business. And I remembered, okay, Shelly, you've done this before and you did it with 1,000 less resources than you have now and you made it work. And so I can't give anyone a magic answer to that other than just what is your safe point and what cushion of cash flow do you have to help with your other business? And I know it's just some of these things is it's momentum and you get going and things kind of fall into place and you just have to go with the flow. So I don't know. I don't know the magic answer to that, but I just was like, again, I'm just going to dive in and see where it takes me.
Yeah, for sure. I think certainly one of the things you've got on your side is you're free in terms of being locked into clients. You've got the time to do that, right?
Correct.
And then your safety cushion, that's, you know, if you're not making a profit in your current business.
Don't.
I think that it's a mistake to think, well, I can go and make more profit in the other and double what I have now if it's not a formula that's already working, right?
And that was my problem. My very first salon was 1,700 square feet with 10 chairs, and it was really doing pretty well from what I thought. So I thought, well, why don't we just double it? And we're moving into this bigger space. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have double the profit. No, I had the same income, but double the expenses. So it just was not a smart move on my part. So I've learned from that for sure and where to be at in my space in life. And so that was a huge learning lesson for me.
Yes, I had the exact same experience. Doubled the rent, doubled the team, doubled the trouble.
Yeah.
And double my driving time between the two locations.
Oh my gosh.
When the infrastructure really wasn't at the right level to be free enough to go and do double trouble.
Right. Totally.
So many lessons. All right. Now what, you know, when we spoke nearly 18 months ago, I actually just went and had a quick look. It was nearly 18 months ago. You know, you shared a quote with us. So tell us, what is your mantra or your quote that sort of is at the forefront at the moment for you?
My mantra, the one I've been really telling myself and promoting to other people that want to get started doing anything with business is just keep moving forward. If you feel like you're not doing anything, you are, don't give up the hope. If you just go get coffee with another salon owner and ask them questions about what you're trying to do, that's forward movement. If you just set up an Instagram page, that's forward movement. If you get that website domain or you come up with that name, that's forward movement. So that's my mantra, is just keep going.
Great. Good advice. What yes. about a book or a podcast or a resource that that you can recommend for our listeners?
Yeah. So Michael Cole, he is one of the founders of Summit. He has a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/Michael.Cole, and that's C-O-L-E. He has so many great inspirational quotes. Once a week, he does a Facebook Live video with someone in the industry, and I've been on a couple of them about social media. And he's a total game changer. The guy is in his late 60s, but he really has his finger on the pulse of everyone in the industry and what it takes to be successful. And I love him, and he's such a great mentor. And I've seen him speak before, and you just leave feeling totally inspired. So go and be a fan on his Facebook page. You won't regret it.
That's awesome. Now, I know that you'll have some fans who want to reach out and stalk you. So where can we find you?
So on Facebook, it's facebook.com/Urban Betty Salon. And then on Instagram, it's Urban Betty Salon. And then I'm just Urban Betty.
Awesome. Thank you so much for investing some time with us today. And we will have to have you back and yes. hear the next chapter of your journey. I've really appreciated you sharing your story.
Thank you. I can't wait to catch back up again.
Well, there you have it. That wraps another episode of the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Now, I wanted to ask you, are you ready to escape your fully booked column so you can devote your time to actually growing your business? Maybe having a team you can trust to handle daily client care and management without constantly double checking. How about actually going on a 2-week holiday without sacrificing 2 weeks of income, let alone coming back to a list longer than when you left? If that's you, then it's time to join the Salon Owners Collective Hub, where you get all the training, resource, and support you need to get out from behind the chair and into a space of having the time to grow your team, expand your business, and skyrocket your income, all without working crazy hours to make it happen. Every month we have new trainings, Q&A coaching sessions, not to mention the daily support of fellow business owners who are right alongside you on the journey to growing a profitable salon. If you're ready to make greater freedom, bigger profits your priority, and it's time to raise your scissors in the air and declare that it's time to make a change, head to the salonownerscollective.com or to the link that are in our show notes on this episode to learn more about the Salon Owners Collective Hub and what you'll get if you come and join the community. And as always, thank you for joining me, and I hope to see you inside the hub.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Tune in each week as we reveal the latest insight and advice on what it takes to make your salon a success today. Subscribe to the Salon Owners Collective podcast on iTunes or visit us online at salonownerscollective.com for answers to your common questions, to follow Larissa, and much more. Thanks for listening. See you next time.